Hey, everybody, and welcome to the Bizarre Briefing for January 26th.
January.
God damn it.
January.
I was trying to power through it. For January.
I thought it was great.
Thank you, John.
That was the best intro I've ever heard.
Thank you, John. For January 2016, I'm Bryce Castillo. That was John Tilton and Brant Hughes.
Hey.
Hey, everybody.
How's it going? It's been a while.
People... Not only did we not have a December episode.
Nice. Segue into that first topic real smooth.
Yeah, boy. We also, the YouTube version of November went up like 3 days ago.
Yeah.
Oh, well then, so those people are like, whoa, we already had an episode, now we got a new one.
Yeah.
Wow.
But I had people telling me like, hey, you guys skipped 2 months. And like, no, we skipped 1 month.
Wait, somebody talked to you about the show?
Yeah.
Somebody watched the show?
Somebody cared enough and only watches it on YouTube to have cared that it was.
There's something about the monthly thing, too, that's like builds that anticipation, right?
Yeah.
Like if you have something every week, you're like, oh, yeah, next week.
Like if you miss one, you could just catch up next week.
Right.
Like whatever. But when it's monthly,
then it's like, where have you been?
Yeah.
Setting that up. So welcome back. New year, new studio.
Whoa.
It's true.
Although
I don't know how much you can notice on the... Well, I guess the camera stuff's completely different.
Well, and I imagine that everybody who's watching this is watching watches some other show that's produced in the studio.
Yeah, probably.
So they've probably heard the spiel of we rearranged stuff, got a lot more space, a lot more usable space. We no longer have to shoot in very specific camera angles.
Does it go through pretty well?
No, not really.
Not so much to Brant, because Brant is pretty tight.
Yeah. But like it's a big difference for us. Like it feels very different in here.
Right. There's a freshness to having this much usable space.
Yeah.
You suddenly have options,
mm-hmm.
which we were much more limited in the other configuration.
John, could you imagine if we shot extra credit in this space, like as opposed to the weird, like, gangly,
yeah,
like,
well,
side?
That was so long ago that...
Because you guys were right up against that plastic.
But it was crowded, so this would be a lot better to... I don't know. I don't know if I feel more comfortable. I always feel like weird shooting those anyway because, you know, it's designed to, you know, I don't know anything going into it. I always feel kind of like, what am I doing?
Yeah. But for me, it always felt like the warehouse feels like it would have been like the perfect space for that
because
it gives so much room to do stuff and all of that. But I always felt weird shooting that in here
because
it was just so tight.
And it's still small. Like we were shooting stuff in here on Friday and we had all of us plus other people in and it was like it was pretty crowded but
it would have been impossible before the setup with the same number of people doing the same types of things.
Well, especially with because the look's a lot nicer.
Mm-hmm.
Like we could have done it, but it would just be, I don't know, it would have been different. It would feel a lot different,
and I we probably wouldn't have had room for the 3-camera setup.
We probably would have shot two handhelds
instead of one.
Well, so previously with extra credit, when we shot like the crazy side thing, we did have 3 cameras, but it was pretty tight.
Yeah.
Yeah. But also when we did that, I was telling John the other day, and you, because you were here.
Yeah.
Back when we shot extra credit, like we didn't have most of these cameras lenses. We shot on my Canon 5D Mark II, which has a like 10 to 12 minute recording limit on it. So we would stop down every 10 minutes and then start back up.
Jeez.
And I'd have to resync all those. And then we had Brian's T3i, T2i.
The Rebel. The Rebel T2i, I think.
Yeah.
And that one overheats.
Yeah, that one overheats.
Like, and it had
I forgot
same,
about that.
That still has the same recording limit. Like 10, 11 minutes, or it should have, unless it was hacked.
I don't think it officially has the limit, but because of the overheating issue, you basically have that. I think it's a little bit longer. You couldn't run it for more than 20 minutes without run into an issue. Yeah.
And then we had one of these cameras.
Wow. And now we have three of these and the GH4. Four. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's
the good old
brave new world.
Hard days. Stuff was tough.
Yeah. And
we were making this in a cave.
Like I said before, half of those extra credits I made in After Effects.
That's which blows my mind. That's always my favorite.
It blows
fact.
My mind. Is like it? Editing with After Effects is so like tedious.
It is. It was insane. It was insane. And then the other half I did with Sony Vegas, which I didn't know how to do. That was like my first experience doing anything multicam. And then I didn't actually start using Premiere until the first episode of Scam School. That was the first thing I did in Premiere.
So really, a lot of your video editing, you know, you've always had that as kind of a hobby and whatever. But like a lot, would you say a lot of that skill developed just over, you know, shooting Scam School a lot and just
a lot of like the fundamentals of editing I learned beforehand, as far as like just piecing together things.
Yeah.
But I learned a tremendous amount as far as like pacing, as far as like clarity of illustration and demonstration, especially with Scam School, because Scam School is so like teaching oriented, and all the extra credit stuff is teaching oriented. And so you have to like not only be entertaining, but you have to clearly and effectively show the thing you're trying to show, which I learned a lot about. And then also just like working on a bigger production on a really tight time frame. Really kind of helped push my craft once I started on that stuff. So I did have a fair number of the basics down beforehand, but I really refined all of my work through Scam School.
Yeah.
Cool, good stuff.
I mean, I feel like same.
Yeah.
Like, I was doing some video work before I got here, but it was very much like long form, kind of low impact stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And so making the shift over to shorter, more punchy pacing, a lot of that developed because of Scam School, just in the year or so that I've been doing it.
Right.
By the way, it's been a year.
Yeah.
Hooray. It's been here 1 year.
Yeah.
It's been a little over 2 years since I started doing Scam School,
mm-hmm.
which is fun. It's been... Christ, how long has it been since I've got here? I got here. I feel like we do this every month.
Probably. Yeah. Probably every other month or so.
Yeah.
So it's time. We need to just write down, move to Austin in 2013.
Yeah, we just need to have like a timeline on a whiteboard up here. That'd be good.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's been a while though.
Yeah.
Good stuff.
So we have a whole month to catch up on.
Mm-hmm.
What do we want to talk about first? More recent stuff? More older stuff? We got a lot to talk about.
I mean, recent stuff is fresh on my mind. I don't remember December. Okay. I remember I was gone for vacation for a little bit of it, and that's about it. I don't know what happened in December.
We had a last minute. Shoot, Scam School shoot.
Right, yeah.
Because we found out we did not have enough episodes to get us through the end of the year.
Yes.
Through our vacations. So we banged out just like two?
Two or three. Something like that.
This is like, thanks to math alerting us that we did not have enough episodes.
Yeah. And we still really don't know how many.
We need more.
Well, and it's funny because like Brian and I definitely had that conversation when I was talking about my vacation plans with him. He was like, "So we have enough to get us through the year, right?" And like I was looking at the guide and I was pretty sure, but it was the type of thing where it was so close, where it was on the line.
You know, like, there are dates on all of those. just gonna throw that out there.
Okay. Okay.
So you don't have to do the math.
Well, okay,
Bryce
you got
just
me.
Likes doing the math, though.
Yeah, no, I just wanted to try out my
he's
addition.
Just doing hardcore
I don't blame
equations.
You. I used to competitively do mental math, so
wait, really?
Yeah, in UIL.
Wow.
Wait, so, what,
look
is
out.
That like?
Look out.
Is that like speed or
A little bit.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, I think you get like bonus points if you're fast. Like or something.
Someone,
I don't know.
If someone popped up behind you and said 7 times 6.
Yeah, that's how they do it. Yeah.
Was that through like school or what was? Yeah. Okay.
I didn't do it. I didn't do it for very long though. I did it for like a year or two.
I was in math competitions in elementary and middle school. So it was
what
like.
What are math competitions?
Yeah.
This is bizarre.
Have you been in math competitions?
No.
See, he didn't get out of his system. That's why he's like, I got to do the math.
Yeah.
We're like, eh.
He's hopeless. He'll never be satisfied. Yeah, I did a couple of different versions of math. I did mental math. I did like calculator math. And then I did a lot of spelling and grammar stuff.
What was this like? And what grade were you in? And
this was high school, probably early high school.
Okay, so that was probably like compared to my math, where it was like you're basically just taking a test with other schools, and they would, you know, get prizes out or whatever. But for you, that was probably like heavy duty math.
I also did like academic decathlon, which is kind of spanning the whole.
That just sounds that sounds harder.
It's intense.
It is harder.
It sounds 10 times
it's
harder.
And every year, academic decathlon focuses on like a period of time. So I want to say this was right around the French Revolution. So it was like literature in French Revolution, math in French Revolution.
Wow,
some crazy shit.
Oh my God.
It was good though. I was kind of there because I had like B's and all of my friends had A's for grades. And so they had like the A team totally filled out, but they had nobody in the B team. So I was just like, yeah, I'll do it. I was okay for the most part.
Sure.
But I was real good at interview. I was really happy with interview because I'm so charismatic.
Interview? Interview is not a school subject. Like,
yeah, there's an interview.
They would interview you for, like, a job during the French Revolution? Is that, like, what's that section?
How many horseshoes an hour can you make?
I think the French Revolution stuff more pertained to, like, a lot of the literature stuff and things like that.
Oh, like an oral exam.
Yeah.
Okay. I was expecting, what's your favorite color? Or, like, something like debate.
I kind of like our made-up version of this better, where you're just like, they're just seeing if you could survive.
Right.
And like this,
that would be pretty cool.
Could you do the math that you need to build like whatever, you know, architecture was like?
And everybody dresses up and they have reenactors.
Like and you have to like cook certain food. I like that.
That'd be pretty good.
Make me a quiche, but it's a time appropriate quiche.
Right.
So you can't use like homogenized milk and you have to use like,
man, this test is going to take forever.
Yeah.
You gotta go out and grow that stuff.
Yeah. And then you gotta cook it. Quiche is not easy to cook.
I feel like we have a new game show idea that we should be doing. Like you bring in contestants from all the, you don't tell them what time frame you're going to be in, and then they are, and they have like, you know, an hour to make their costumes or whatever, and you go through all this thing, and people get like voted out, and like, I don't know. I feel like it would be a good game show.
Iron Age Chef.
Iron Age Chef.
Iron Age Chef.
All right, yeah. That works.
Wow. I bet you didn't expect this conversation to go here.
I didn't, but I'm so pleased.
I certainly didn't expect it when
our topic
is talking about the month of December and what we missed.
So we had that shoot. What else? So, how was vacations? Very briefly. Good vacations? Yes?
Yeah.
Yeah, it was fine.
Yeah.
Travel around, see family.
Yeah. Same, John?
Yeah. It's, it's funny because, and maybe this, I don't know where the rest of the doc goes. I think this is fine to talk about now.
Sure.
It's funny because the way the workflow is, at the end of the year, basically, you know, we've had products come out every week or so since last February through October, early November, something like that. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's basically adding new stuff. There's a certain kind of rhythm you get into from that. And then all of a sudden, at the end of the year, it's just like all Christmas orders. Stuff gets really busy with that. And then it just turns into this like...
lull.
You just need to... Well, I'm talking about when it's busy. It's okay. Like you just need to do what is obvious. So it's hard work, but it's all very straight, like clear and straightforward. And so that part's really good. But then, of course, the busy part, you know, that has difficult nature to it. But then now in January, it's like, well, all the, you know, just Christmas rush orders are gone. Mm-hmm. And so now it's a lot of like trying to get back into
development.
It's almost like switching jobs, almost like you kind of get this natural switch before, but then you get this abrupt, well, Christmas is over. No one really is looking to buy. You know, we have sales still, but they're not the same.
Right. Typical post-Christmas.
You kind of go from fulfillment to development to
And it's a weird thing because it's a different section of your brain. So it's just like there's just days where I'm like trying to like get back into it and you're just like, I feel like I did nothing compared to last month, you know?
Yeah.
But it's finally, you know, I can really start to feel it now. So December was a weird month. I don't actually think a lot of interesting because we didn't have any
launches. No.
So I feel like I don't have really anything interesting to report that we would have missed.
Yeah.
So
well,
can
you confirm new stuff coming to Scam Stuff?
Yeah. Well, we did on Friday. Mm-hmm. We didn't have a video for it, so you guys might not have known about this. We actually don't have a video for this week's either, mm-hmm. As we're kind of slowly getting back into things. But we did this legendary lockpick expansion set,
wow.
Which is very exciting because, so if you guys remember the ultimate
lockpick,
the picture's not too exciting, probably because we did this all ourselves and didn't have your help with it. But this is what it sounds like in an expansion to that Ultimate Lockpick Trainer. If you want to click that link there to the old one,
mm-hmm.
So it's an expansion to this. So you
get more.
Yeah, you get
locks,
more of those,
and they're higher difficulty.
Yeah, they're much much higher difficulty, ooh, which was a big request because you know, for most people, if you've never picked a lock before, this is perfect for
like figuring it out.
Yeah. You start super easy, you kind of add more pins, and that's what the progression is. You add another pin, add another pin, add another pin, until you get to a 5-pin lock, which is more or less, you know, a standard kind of lock, but it's still an easier 5-pin lock. Mm-hmm. Right. So we worked with Brian Knows a Locksmith, and he actually developed a follow-up course, which is you can find it on other sites, so we don't make those. We work with the people who do. Mm. But this one is, you can only find it on our site, and it's completely developed and handmade. These locks are handmade to, and you can see a little bit on the description what each is. Mm-hmm. Our Brian's friend Dan Kunath did that, and I think he did a great job kind of making a diverse selection there. And so we haven't gotten any feedback yet because they're just going to start shipping out either today or tomorrow. So we started taking orders Friday, but people started to get it at the end of this week. So I think people will like it, but it was one of our most requested things last year was to get people would finish it and just be like,
what do I do now?
Hey, I finished this. Is there a level, you know, level 6 or whatever? So this is what we came up with Dan.
That's cool.
So let's play a mini game because Brant didn't know about these. So these each got names. Each of the locks got names.
Are you going to ask what he thinks
so,
they do?
Yeah. So lock one. Well, just if he can figure out what the names.
There's no way he'll.
Maybe.
I'm trying to think. Did you look through these yet?
I have seen the list once or twice because I got the email, but I don't think I went through all of them. So lock
number
one.
There's no way he'll guess them.
Is the Devastator. We'll just see how close. We'll use math to figure out how close he is. We'll figure out points. I don't know. What do you think lock two is? Named.
The Vanquisher.
The Vanquisher. All right.
Uh-huh.
Lock number two is the Punisher.
Okay.
That's kind of close. You got the Isher.
Sure.
How the Brontosaurus is humping the lock.
He's just going to town.
Sex sells.
I thought that was a nice touch.
Also, one of these dinosaurs apparently has electrical powers because it says zap.
Well, that's the lock.
Lock.
Yeah.
It's saying zap.
At least in my... I put all these bad Photoshops together. And in my mind,
they're great.
The lore of the world here that I built,
right?
The comic book noises are coming from the lock when he kind of enters the.
Oh, so you clear all the pins and then it goes zap.
No, that is not zap. A feat. Yeah, we don't want to false advertise here,
but it doesn't actually.
Yeah, it
do
does
that.
Not do that.
Okay,
but in the fictional narrative, the
fictional
of the
narrative,
locks.
Yeah, just yeah. Like your Star Wars figures don't actually, you know, they don't say
have vocal
lines
cords
in the movie.
And
although now they probably do these
well,
things, but
action figures have been saying lines.
Yeah, this
for movies
is just
for
kind
a really
of a
long time, actually.
This is a narrative connection to the actual locks, yeah. But it's.
It's in-universe canon. Yeah. It's not actually IRL canon.
Right. Yes.
Okay, what about lock number three? We got the Punisher and the Devastator.
Lock number three is going to be the onomatopoeia.
The onomatopoeia. All right, well, let's take a look.
Yeah.
The Slippery Ninja. Pow, it says.
I want to say that's half credit.
Yeah, I'll give you half credit
okay,
for
yeah.
it. Slippery. Especially considering there's no possible way you would guess any of these. Although I will say the next two are guessable based on your previous information.
Oh, interesting. Well, what about four? If you didn't see it when I accidentally scrolled too far.
I didn't. Okay. I made sure to try to not see it.
Okay.
I mean, so this isn't really based off of previous information, so it's probably wrong. But I wanna go with something with a wizard, something with a sorcerer. That sounds very Brian.
Yeah.
So I wanna go with the shifty wizard.
The shifty wizard. Okay.
Yeah.
That probably should have been one, but it's not.
Lock four. the Devastator 2: Revenge of the Devastation. This one goes zing.
Ooh.
It's upside down. Is this is like a
he's
this is like
barrel rolling?
Okay, he's barrel rolling through anime. I think this is like an Android RPG that you've pulled this image from.
Yeah, you know, I'm fully expecting one of these people.
We're gonna get a DMCA copyright thing on this show.
yeah, that's. I'm fully expecting an email at some point. Please change the image, and I'll just put a different image in the back, but.
All right, very briefly, number five.
All right, Devastator 3, Electric Boogaloo.
The Punisher 4, Russian Justice. It goes kaboom. And is this robotic Stalin?
It from the video game All Your Base are Belong to Us. It's a fan art.
Okay.
Of
the bad guy from that game. Okay. But also as Stalin. This is Stalin.
At least I think so. I saw a caption that...
you know that this is Joseph Stalin.
Sure, but he's got that red eye.
Sure. But the bad guy from that video game didn't look like this.
I thought... Yeah, I don't know. I haven't played that.
Okay.
Yeah, wasn't the bad guy like a cat?
Oh, yeah. Now, okay. Well, the only reason I said that was there was like a caption.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I guess he does look completely different.
Yeah, we've got the all-your-base
really
guy.
Red eye.
Yeah, he doesn't even have... He's got, like, a jewel in his...
I'm sorry about that. The reason I thought that was there was, like, a caption, you know, on Google
it said
Images.
It
said, all your base are belong to us. And I was like, oh, I guess it's the guy from the thing.
Oh, interesting. Maybe it was, like, meme base.
Or maybe, you know, sometimes it doesn't match up the picture. So
sure.
Maybe there was something else on there.
So we do have a question for Wobblopagus. So we've got... they're listed as 1A, 2A, 3A, 4A. Are we going to get 1B, 2B, 3B, or is that expansion?
Yeah, it depends on, it depends on how these sell. They're off to a pretty good start, but we'll see how they continue, and we want to get feedback on these as well. We don't want people to think, oh, they're too hard, or they're not as fun, or, you know, we want to get proper feedback on it before we commit to doing another set.
Sure. But that's kind of laying the groundwork.
It's something that could happen. Gotcha. But there's no current plans for it. But I don't know if we'll do 1B, 2B, 3B.
Freebie.
We originally it was the A was for advanced, so one advanced, two advanced. But I if we did another one, I would probably to avoid confusion do 1B.
Yeah.
2B. I think that would make sense and just kind of change what our. just ignore that it.
So if A stood advanced. For advanced, no, but
because then you would like, what would you do? Ultra advanced, 1UA,
badass, the
ultra HD,
right? Badass. C would be
oh yeah, you can do badass.
Cow pusher, no. Current
carrot.
D devastator, the expansion, the standalone expansion pack. And then E would be evil.
All right.
Boom.
Sure.
Marketing is easy.
Yeah.
Yeah. What I should we have up to 5Z planned.
Wow. I'm just gonna,
no, that's not true.
Oh, damn it.
It's a 10-15 year plan.
Yeah, 10 or 15 year plan. Yeah.
So that's some scam stuff. Should we be expecting any kind of behind the scam stuff coming down the pipeline once we get like new products coming out and stuff?
Yeah, you know, I'm actually not 100% sure what all is official information out there, so I don't want to say too much.
Right.
But it's clear based that on,
we haven't done a behind the scam in a little bit.
Yeah, we haven't done one for a while, and we're considering kind of changing how that the feel of that is.
Yeah.
So. In some of these smaller releases, there won't be, but I think there'll be something coming
there,
up.
I feel like it's pretty safe to say something will come back hopefully soon. We kind of are waiting on a couple of different things to pan out.
Yeah, but currently the best way to keep up with new products is the email list. That's the place where people will hear about it first. Mm-hmm. We got something coming out this Friday, and then it should be the Friday after that too. So we should be back in the weekly schedule. If everything keeps running smoothly.
But yeah, you can sign up on scamstuff.com. Yeah, just use the left bar to say
email that.
Enter email address.
Brian will personally spam your face with awesome.
They're really well written. They're pretty well written. They're good written.
We try to make them, we try to make it so you're not bummed out that you get the email. I know, like, especially for people who, because you actually click to sign up for it, but you know, some people just click that not knowing, or they think they're agreeing to something else or whatever, they're not reading it. And I know I do that when I like Christmas shop for other people, and then, you know, sometimes you just get loaded with like just really lame, super straightforward, like here's
how
they're
many
not
points
even like
have.
Products a lot of times, they're just like, yeah, like something like that, or
I swear to God,
a sale for 10% off or something.
Yeah,
we really even if it's something like simple like a sale for 10% off,
you make it fun and interesting.
Yeah,
to read.
We really try to make it interesting to read, so if you go through the email, even if you have no interest in the product, you can get kind of an entertainment value out of reading the email. So that's kind of the goal that we have for those.
I bought a pair of underwear 4 or 5 years ago, and I still get emails from them.
Have
saying,
you unsubscribed?
I've tried. I have. It's a thing. It's like it's. I feel like underwear is just below the line of like shady enough where they won't unsubscribe you from a list. Right, like I think when you get to shade. No, I mean it though. Like they're
where are you buying underwear from some back alley dealer.
No, it's actually kind of an expensive place. I won't say it because they don't deserve promotion. But like, it's one of those things where they get your information and they have it, and you have to like shut everything down and like delete your account, and because the only reason
bankruptcy.
They're emailing me is to say that I have points. Somehow, I have some sort of points for their shop.
How many more points do you need for a new set of underwear?
You should spend those points.
I probably.
I'm gonna start emailing you. Hey, Bryce, you remember those points?
Points found or points earned?
Jump in the Slack. Hey, Bryce, what about those points?
but we don't have any scam points. No scam points guaranteed.
Yeah, well, it's funny because on one end we've been interested in adding some sort of scam points at some point, but I can tell you right now we won't email you telling you how many scam points you have left at that. If we do any point system for purchases,
you heard it here first.
I'm gonna see if I can find how many points.
Yeah, man, you should get on those points. Meanwhile. John
okay,
and I can vamp. Talk about some point stuff.
You want to talk about points?
Points.
What would you want points for from scam stuff?
I want points to gamify my purchasing so that way I can level up and,
yeah,
get,
yeah,
and get discounts on
you know, there's products. Because we use Shopify, so there's a couple things that do that, but they're like very they're like weirdly expensive for like what it is. It's like, okay, right. So you're looking at your software is looking at the purchases, finding the accounts and giving them points. Mm-hmm. And it's like, you're going to charge us like $300 a month to do that, really? And then, and then you're like, it's probably worth more while to like go through and like tally up points like by hand rather than, what are we looking at over here? What kind of underwear are you buying?
What do you think happened? Like, look, I have 75 bucks. I have 75 of their store bucks, and I don't know how to redeem them. And this,
I mean, John, you look at some underwear websites, you're going to see some people in underwear. I'm just saying.
Yeah, John.
Well, it was just an inch. Did it flash up on here?
No.
It was just an interesting.
It was a couple of guys wearing tiny underwear.
Did some dudes in underwear.
They seemed highly appreciative of each other's.
On the spectrum of like uncomfortable images we could have pulled up via purchases, it's on the lower
end. Oh, yeah, yeah. It's on the lower end.
Okay.
But I don't know. It was just weird that we kept going down the.
I was trying to see what. I was trying to contextualize the 75 points. How about that?
That's good.
Yeah.
It's contextualized.
I'm trying to do my job as the producer. And this monitor, this new monitor we got set up is ruining my bit.
It's good. It's good.
Anyway. Oh, my gosh. Yeah. Points. Points.
Points, man.
Points.
Yo, we should take some photos like that for scam stuff.
Shmoo Lord says, hope Brian doesn't go through the history.
Oh, yo. Brian's probably got worse stuff.
I made it sound worse than it was.
Night attack happens on the computer. There's far worse stuff.
Right. Yeah. My YouTube history is worse than this. Well, I guess it would be transitive property.
Let's not go down that road.
Okay.
So.
Because we use my YouTube on Night Attack.
We talked about the new studio space a little bit.
Yeah,
we got some new bits of equipment.
So we ordered some new stuff on Friday after the shoot that we had in here, and about half of it showed up.
Mm-hmm. Did you order on Amazon? Is that why it came so quick? Yeah,
it came on Sunday.
Yeah, because they do that in Austin.
Yeah, which is weird. So we got some new 21-inch monitors. One of them is what the guys are looking at now, which shows what I've got pulled up on this screen. The other one is going to be over here for so I can see Skype, because we don't have a duplicate of that monitor.
Right.
So I'm like, I've had to have Brian like tell me what I'm pointing at because I can't totally see it.
Mm-hmm.
We also have ordered a 32-inch monitor so that the full chat window here can be seen on the wall and a wall mount for it.
Are you do like a vertical?
No, because this is only because it's going to duplicate this, which is a 4x3 monitor.
Okay.
So even vertical won't do much for it, but it'll beat the three, you know, the three lines that are on the program monitor or him looking at his laptop.
Gotcha.
We also got a bunch of HDMI cables, DVI cables, camera cables.
Right.
We have gotten a new kick light. It's a is it LEDs? It uses an LED panel and it's got Wi-Fi, so you can do colors and effects and fun stuff with it. And it's really light and it's USB charged to kind of potentially replace some of the lighting panels.
Yeah, because we've been having some issues with our lights lately.
Yeah, and so now instead of having to have the panels, which are already, you know, so heavy, and then batteries for them.
Mm-hmm.
This is something we're experimenting with.
Right.
We've ordered a slider.
Yes.
Which you're excited. What was it called again?
The Rhino slider.
The Rhino, right.
The V1 slider.
And a tripod head to go with it.
Yes.
And
real excited about that.
Yeah, that'll be cool. Sliders.
I've never
they have
used
a very
one.
Specific purpose, or yeah. like they have very specific purpose uses. But when you have them, it looks amazing.
Yeah, for sure.
Other things? We got some new splitters for the new monitors and stuff.
And we ordered a new lav.
That's right. We ordered a very expensive lav that we think will be good for under
under the shirt.
Connecting for under the shirt, right?
Yeah.
So we're going to experiment with that.
Industry standard.
Industry standard. That's what that was the entire criteria. We had two that we were looking at, and one of them said industry standard. The other one didn't.
Well,
were they the same price?
They were
about $50 off. Yeah. The guy who Brian contacted, one of the sound guys from Hacking the System, to ask for advice about it, and he said the one that we ordered was industry standard.
Oh, he said that.
Yes. I see.
Oh, I thought it said it on the Amazon page.
No.
You would think for a $400 microphone, they would put more than one photo and some text on
it. Right. That was embarrassing for them.
It's so weird how these companies that sell expensive, expensive musical equipment, or just any tech, will put one very low resolution
image. Postage size.
No data. Like the copy paste of just like the little brief copy that they have about it. Like no technical specs. We almost bought the wrong one. We almost bought one that didn't have the right connector.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Because it was just like hidden.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've seen that happen before.
I think at some point they just like they're not so concerned about selling to consumers, mm-hmm. who are going to be most of the people who are looking at it on Amazon.
Yeah.
Whereas the like production companies that are actually buying these,
they know
from
what they
them,
need.
They contact the company.
Yeah,
they buy like, it from them specifically.
Yeah. Especially if they're doing some like I don't know. Sometimes people are like they'll have stuff on Amazon just to even have it there,
right.
like and not really care about the sales on there because a lot of times they're not making as much money off of that.
Oh yeah.
So there could be a lot of reasons, but yeah.
It's a real bummer.
That's like one of like 50 reasons I could probably BS about that, with some truth element in it, you know.
Shocking expose.
Just based on the little that I know about it.
Yeah, it's just so weird because it's kind of a higher ticket price item,
mm-hmm.
you know. But
you would think.
Well, sometimes that's when you have like the worst kind of
because
you were saying, Brand. It's like people who are spending that much money probably did research about it and know, and then they just look for the number of this is the right one. Mm-hmm. They don't care what the picture is.
Right.
Speaking of
audio.
I heard I heard from someone else who was in the room that there was an eerily identical audio issue.
So there have been a few audio issues.
There have been
lately.
A few. That was most recent.
First one was Hypnosis Part 1.
Right.
That episode is out now. It's on YouTube, Vessel, everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
The episodes go out too. Hopefully, if you watch the episode, you won't notice anything super weird about it. But during that shoot, we only had three mics because our fourth mic was in Brian's.
No, we had the fourth one at that. We did have the fourth.
Sure.
Roberto just kind of like that fourth one.
I know kind of how it happened too. Okay. Because
let's set up the problem first. So during that episode, one of the microphones was not on or was like muted.
Just wasn't recorded.
Yeah.
So we ended up only having audio from Brian and Chris,
but not
none of our guests.
Right.
Right.
Which got resolved by the second part, which is going to go up this week.
Yeah. I think it's because we hadn't known what guest until right up to the start of the shoot,
mm-hmm.
and so
mm-hmm.
I remember being given the mics on mute. And then Roberto asked for them back, so I handed it to them. Yeah. And then I think he was rushing to get it on them,
mm-hmm.
and forgot to unmute it. Yeah. I think that's what happened. So it was like one of those silly things.
Yeah. And as far as that goes, that was it sounded fine in the episode.
Right.
I think you did a pretty good job of sussing that out.
A lot of manual tweaking with gain.
Yeah.
On Brian and Chris's stuff.
Even at the end with the guy. The couple of lines that he had sounded great. So you done good.
Yeah. We made it through.
Yeah.
Well, that's probably why he didn't notice either, because he's monitoring it, but he could probably hear everything fine. But just didn't look at the...
Possibly. There are a lot of failure points that could have happened. There was a lot of... We were feeling a little rushed on that.
Yeah, we were feeling rushed, and then that one moves everywhere, too.
Yeah, it was just a weird episode.
So there's a lot happening.
We were prepping to move, like, 3 or 4 times for that episode.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which only... We moved once.
Right.
But,
and also, a lot of times, like, Roberto, who does our sound on Scam School, has to get...
And who does a great job, by the way.
Yeah,
I don't want the one exposure people hear of Roberto's sound work to be, like, the one time he had an issue.
Yeah.
He has a very high success rate of...
It's funny. As I'm editing, I always, like, catch, like, a little thing that Roberto does, and I'm like, oh, Roberto. But then, like, we had a couple episodes where Jaime stepped in and did audio, and, man, it was rough. Like, I love Jaime.
Was it a big difference? Yeah. Well, he doesn't have the
experience. And I was like, let's get Roberto back in here. Come on.
I think I remember, because I think I did one of those that Jaime had done, and they were a little too quiet.
Shoot, I hope the audio I did for the Friday thing is okay. Did you listen to that yet?
Haven't listened to it yet.
No.
But I was just paranoid about the whole
thing. You've done it before. I think
Well, what's there to do? That's why I'm worried about it. I feel like I didn't do anything. I did ride the... Because people get louder and quieter, so you have to make sure they're not hitting the top or too quiet.
Well, even then, that's like not the worst thing if they peak a little bit.
Yeah, ideally, you don't have to do much. I mean, like, anytime we shoot stand-ups or whatever, I just set it, put it on my back, and never touch it.
People who are moving it around, trying to do stuff.
So, like, in Jaime's case, like...
Who's a great guy, very smart.
I told him some good advice, which is, like, it's better to be quiet than it is to be loud, generally speaking. Because you can bump up the gain, but if it's loud and it's peaking, then
it just
sounds really bad. And,
right.
Yeah, you lose data that way. But unfortunately, like, sometimes he'd get, like channels mixed up, and then he would have one, like, written way down as they're talking.
Yeah.
And so...
But and you know what, like, because I've done it a couple of times, and it is confusing, especially at first, just remembering where your channels are and just who is on what, and it happens.
But yeah, to my original point, like, whenever you're doing, like, the sound work, you have to be pretty close to the action so that way you don't get a bunch of RF interference. But unfortunately, the closer you get, the more you can hear them talking bleeding through your recording. So you're not actually getting a clean sample of what's going into the recorder. You're also hearing them just talking.
Yeah.
So it can be hard to figure that stuff out sometimes.
So, but that's not all.
That was the first one.
Yeah.
The second one was, I guess we can go into the remix.
Okay.
So lately if you're a Vessel subscriber, You heard a remix today, which was a little wonky. So
what happened was, so we've got the new studio set up, and normally it would be Brian at the computer. We use a program called Cool Edit Pro, which is from, I think, 2003, to record the audio, which we're using for this program.
Right.
And so when so the computer that software is normally on, got replaced. So this is a new computer with a new copy of the software. But we had it there's an issue when you record in 32-bit audio where if you're not using the right type of encoding or dithering for it, what you get in your other audio programs is like a solid block of audio.
The waveform is just...
Yeah.
Whereas usually it's a dynamic. As
let me see if I can pull it up just to get. Or if you saw, I Instagrammed something about it the other night, and so here's a little peek.
Very patience. All right, we're good. We're good. We're the best.
Let's get it on.
So it sounds like it's
3, 2.
It sounds kind of cool, but it's definitely like completely unusable
for sure. Yeah,
and
it's like a good like mission control like weird distortion kind of thing.
It's noise pop. It's the perfect way to make noise pop.
Right.
And because I had that same issue with Weird Things on Sunday also, as I recorded it and I took it back home and I was like, what the fuck, I can't do anything with this.
Right.
And so I came back in today and that's when I noticed and figured out all this stuff with 32-bit. And we were able to recover all of that stuff. The files weren't bad. It's just the way that they're encoded is not typical.
Oh, interesting. Gotcha.
So everything could be saved. I sent you the new remix audio, yeah, so hopefully we can maybe get that.
Yeah, hopefully we'll get that replaced tonight. Uh-huh. And then everything should be fine for the YouTube stuff. Mm-hmm.
Wait, so the Vessel version is like that?
No, the Vessel version has the cam audio. So it's, it sounds like really roomy. It's little, and,
so that, that's not horrible, though.
It's right. not the worst thing. And I think we can replace stuff before. On Vessel.
That's nothing new.
But we can. I think we can replace that on Vessel, too.
Yeah, we can.
So that'll be good.
I have to...
You have to make it private and then replace it.
Make it private, replace it, then put it back up. And luckily, it keeps all the comments and the views and the likes and everything like that, which is really nice.
Yeah.
So it makes it pretty easy. But that's not all.
That's not all.
That's not all. So we did a Modern Rogue thing this past week, which... you have my word. It will be live on YouTube before February.
Oh, I need to talk to you after the show about this because I never heard about how that went, and I'm excited about it.
Okay, yeah. It should be a really fun episode. We actually have two Modern Rogue episodes shot, one from our first batch.
Oh, that's right.
That hasn't been edited yet. Hopefully we'll get to that pretty soon. But this latest one will come out very soon. It's real fun. We had... we shot at a couple of different locations, and most of it went fine, but, like, the real meat of the episode, we sat down to shoot, and...
They're like rappers, basically. Well, it was, like, the result of the day.
Right, yeah. And that's kind of... That part is mostly the meat of what's going on. And Brian likes to mute his mic a lot.
I don't understand it.
Whether he's going to the bathroom, which happens pretty frequently, or, I mean, like, normal levels, I guess, but just frequently in the middle of a production.
Sure.
Or if he's, like, on the phone or having a private conversation or something, he'll mute the mic so that way it's not in the recording, so that way if somebody's listening to the recording, they don't have to listen to him urinate or whatever.
Sure. And he's got that habit down.
Yeah, he's got the mute. Like,
he knows how to mute it like nothing.
Like, it's kind of just muscle memory at this point, right. I'm assuming, because it's just like a thing that he just does.
But he doesn't have the opposite side of that coin to unmute when he's ready. Because we've talked about this exact story with the Rogue's Tavern unboxing.
With the unboxing, yeah.
And it sounds like a very similar thing happened where there was a break and then... Brian came back and there was no audio for him.
I'm sitting there listening to the audio and I go, okay, guys, give me levels. Okay. All right. Great. Recording. Put it down.
Oh, so his mic pack was on checked.
It was on when I checked. When we started, I said, okay, recording. And then I go over to the camera and Brian's like, hold on. I'm going to go to the bathroom real quick.
God.
Turned it off, walked into the bathroom.
Man.
And then so he comes back and doesn't turn it on, and I'm really focused on visuals because this is like the format of this episode is really
different.
It's very
visual.
Yeah, and so I'm not focusing on audio. And
you already checked it, so people know it's recording, so it should be good.
Like, I think, you know, you just unmute your mic when you're ready to go, and he totally didn't.
We needed Roberto.
Yeah, and Roberto offered
to help. He did offer to come by that day.
I'm really bad about like not wanting to put people out.
When would we need you, Roberto Slim?
Well, in my mind, I'm thinking, oh, it's like stand-ups, right? We never have a problem with stand-ups. I just press record and we go.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then it almost happened again. Brian was like, oh, no, I think my mic was not on. And so I listened through it, and I'm like, yeah, it's not there. Like, I think I can make it work, but it's not there. Worst case scenario, we do voiceover stuff. Mm. And we go to shoot, like, the end wrap-up. And Brian's like, all right, hold on. I'm going to go to the bathroom.
Yeah, so the way the story was told to me is he's about to go to the bathroom. He says, and watch me when I come back because I'm going to unmute it.
That's
and
what
then he
said.
Goes to the bathroom and comes back and promptly does not unmute it.
He's just like checking on his phone. He's like, all right, you guys good to go. I'm like, hey, Brian.
Hey, forgot something, buddy.
You should probably turn on your mic. He's like, yes, I should.
So we actually, the last time this happened, we had bought some equipment to kind of alleviate this by having remote monitoring. which I don't think has got set up. But I think a good habit we could have in the future is because during these game school shoots, Roberto is full service. He likes to take your mic back and unmute it for you. Like he'll do that for Brian. But I think if we're a little more upfront at this game school shoots, it's like, hey, are our mic packs on? and have him just manually check. Maybe he'll be a little more mindful.
Yeah, that's probably a good habit to develop. Oh boy!
Whew. I like that. Next, we have a in depth discussion about art.
We do. If you want to have it,
we want to.
Yeah, yeah.
All right.
I'm excited.
All right. So I put this on the doc.
Okay.
This was a question posed to me in December, and I thought it'd be interesting to hear your guys' thoughts because at least for Bryce and I, it's very intrinsic to our work. But I'm sure John can relate to some degrees as well. Question was, like, if you find, like, can you find art that's not man-made? Like, can you go out in nature and find something and classify it as art?
Oh, interesting. Because you can certainly use nature to make art.
Right.
But could you find art that is not man-made?
This is like a spin on the age-old question. This isn't like video games art
right.
question.
Well, I think in some way it sort of ties into that, but
I think you could find artistic merit in nature, but I would have a hard time defining something. I'm going to say it as nature-made and not man-made, because I think there are already a lot of art pieces that are based off of robotic machinations, some of which are very heavily influenced by either random numbers or just mechanical processes. Mm-hmm. But I would say I would find it tough to say something that is made in and by nature as art, because I think art has at least a modicum of intentionality. That's me,
John.
As a creationist, I would probably veer to the you could definitely find art in nature.
Okay.
I can go into it deeper if you want, but I would almost for if you kind of spin what Bryce was saying with that intentionality.
Right.
So then my viewpoint would be I believe there is an intentionality to it.
Gotcha.
Interesting that you said that, because it kind of
bolsters
it
your
kind of makes
perspective.
Part of our starting point's not the same, but part of our thought process is on that. So
interesting. That's interesting.
So
someone in the chat has posted these images of La Cavernas de Marmol, which are some very beautiful caves. It's got a lot of great colors, and it's beautiful. Wow.
See, here's another thing, though, too, that... because there's something also very different about, like, a photograph of nature, too. There's a different layer of it where it's like...
Where you're asking whether the photograph is the art or the...
Well, because art could also...
Subject.
Even if with the whole, creation thing set aside, when we typically talk about art, we're usually talking about kind of, it's not like your dog's making art or whatever, right? Like, it's typically a pretty human element, too. So even even with that belief in there, I don't know. I'm not fully decided yet, too, because you could say that also there's kind of, like, here the human response to seeing beauty in nature.
Mm-hmm.
Is a type of art, but
that is interesting.
I don't know what the actual definition of art even is too, but
all right. So I have
bringing up definitions.
My
Webster's dictionary defines art.
Let's talk about Marcel Duchamp for a second.
Okay. All right.
He was an artist in the Dadaist movement, and he kind of really led an anti-art movement back in like the early 20th century. I want to say. So here you're seeing a lot of images of Fountain, which is arguably his far and away his
most well-known
work. And this was, it was an interesting thing because he's kind of trying to get to the bottom of like what classifies art. So he put like on some level, he put Fountain up in an art exhibit where he just found like a urinal and he signed it. Right. And he put it in an exhibit and he thought like, oh, well, this is so distasteful that most people won't view it as art, but some might. Mm-hmm. And like, what does that mean? Right. Mm-hmm. So there was a lot of debate about it. And at the time, you know, people really didn't like it. They're like, this isn't art. This is, you know, you're just like, right. you're throwing this in our face. Like, we don't appreciate this.
I mean, because for a long time, you know, art was defined sort of by the French culture as a, there was a hierarchy of art, of like paintings.
Right.
The best types of paintings to make were war paintings because it was totally from your imagination. Mm-hmm. It had multiple subjects. It was landscape. It was action. And then there was a hierarchy that went down from there as just like the impressiveness of a painting was objective.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's what you see from sort of Duchamp and other movements that came out that were sort of anti big art, anti museum, anti traditional.
Right.
Well, presentation has a lot to do with it too, though, right? Because if you look at the urinal, mm-hmm. when you look at the picture of that, how it's presented, it's not like you walk into a bathroom and see a urinal.
Sure.
Like, you're experiencing that in a completely different way. Like, it's asking you to, it's asking you to respond to it versus just running into it, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So
it spawned a lot of discussion. You know, obviously he didn't sculpt the urinal.
Right.
He signed it. Some people were like, that's vandalism. Some people were like, eh. Some people were like Joe Mon in chat, who says, like, somebody designed that urinal, though.
Yeah.
I think a lot of it deals with, like, the way that he recontextualized it, like, kind of like John was saying. He sort of reappropriated it for an artist intent, so to speak. So these days, it's typically considered art pretty much broadly across the board.
Yeah.
And a fairly important piece of art. And I haven't really studied, like, really deeply into it, so I can't necessarily say why. But in my mind, there are two possible reasons. One that I personally like, which will help me answer the original question.
Okay.
So the other one is that, yes, it's art because he imbued it with artist intent. He recontextualized it in such a way that it speaks as an art piece, mm-hmm. right? And I think I wouldn't be surprised if that was the more commonly accepted reasoning behind why that's art.
It's pretty similar to, I think, what John and I were saying.
Yeah. And why I kind of, not to say I wasn't really going back on what I was saying, but it really depends on, you know, like I was saying with the presentation, mm-hmm. like, you know, that's why the art is exhibited or, you know, presented in a certain way. And it is kind of a man-made construct for, like, you know, taking a, you know, because it's different walking into nature and seeing it there. But if you were to go and, like take a piece of land out and bring it into a museum, like, mm-hmm. just like how it was and just put it there, it would kind of gain a new context, right? Because it would be the way you're presenting it then becomes something different.
Sure.
And so, because then you can easily fall into the trap where it's like, everything I look at is art. This way the microphone is art. And it's like, you know, I guess you could argue that and I'd be like, fine, whatever. Sure.
Mm-hmm.
But I do think having that, the way you're exhibiting it is,
plays into it.
Plays a huge part, at least in how we understand it as a term.
Sure. But what is your hot take?
So my view is, I think on some level it's broadly considered an art because people view it as art. So
it's from the viewer's perspective rather than
it's a perception thing and not an intention thing. Because if everybody died today and somehow some new life form came in like hundreds of years down the road and they find a thing that we made, would they consider it art or not? They have no idea of what the intention of the creator is. Like, it's just whether or not they kind of view it as art. And I think on some level it's like So art is so heavily defined by human creation and creativity and ingenuity and that kind of stuff. But I think people tend to overlook the fact of like how much creativity there is in the spark of inspiration that happens in your mind when you perceive a thing as something that maybe it isn't entirely, mm-hmm. right? So that's the great thing about art is art stimulates so much conversation and feelings and thoughts and, you know, it can be contentious and people can have different views on it, like the fountain. And I think something that's not necessarily man-made can still have that effect on you in some cases. It's just a bit more rare, right? So as a creator and an artist, I feel like it's not inherently my job to make art, although I think a lot of times that happens because I view my own art as art. Mm-hmm. But it's more necessary to
make someone else understand it as art.
Right, like create an environment in which other people can perceive art.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
I do think that's an interesting perspective on it. Mm-hmm. I think as far as leaving it to the eye of the beholder, you enter a dichotomy of people who would see something like the fountain and say it isn't art, and then it would you still consider it art because at least some people do?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I think for me, it's a binary thing. It's if somebody sees it as art, then it's art. Mm. Then you just have to merit whether it's well done, whether it's good art, whether it's not. Then you can talk about intentionality, and that becomes an element of the discussion of the art piece, but is not the necessary qualifying factor.
Mm-mm. Interesting.
I have a similar. There's a rant I have that is very
ready
connected
for a patented
to all this.
John rant.
You know when people bring this up a lot where they're like, I think they did this is based on a real life experiment they did where they took someone who was playing in some, concert hall and people are paying hundreds of dollars to see them, play the cello or violin, whatever. I forget the artist. Mm-hmm. But then they brought the same artist to the streets and they're playing and they have
Oh, sure. Well, I've seen those videos.
People are saying that because they're at a concert, it's worth this much, but on the streets, it's only worth a quarter or whatever. Sure. And I always
I've seen that BuzzFeed video.
I get what they're trying to say, but at the same time, the acoustics and the atmosphere of being on this, going back to presentation, when you're at a concert hall, a building that is magnificently designed to bring the sound of instruments to your ears in the best possible manner. Mm, it's right. That is, at least to me, totally worth paying. If someone was you can see, Kelsey and I actually just got tickets to see John Williams, super excited.
Ooh,
in August.
Nice.
Exciting.
But,
August.
I know it's far away.
Damn.
But, I hope he's healthy during that time. But if someone was you can pay, $200 or whatever to see John Williams conduct, whatever in a concert hall.
Versus
or for free,
what would you tip him in a subway?
Not even tip. Or just go for free.
Yeah.
And you can do either or go for free. And you guys know me. I'm a cheapskate. I'm the free version or whatever, right? But conduct a quintet on the streets. And it's that would be a cool experience in its own way, right? Mm-hmm. But it's if you want the thing to be as it's supposed to sound and an environment that makes it sound the best, it's pay the $200, get the full thing.
Yeah.
It's almost
you're paying for
like,
fidelity and for context and for comfort.
Yeah, it's almost like seeing a movie in the theater versus seeing a VHS copy that was taped off television or something.
Or seeing it on a plane or something.
Yeah, it on a plane. It's you can't say, because you paid less I get mad when they're it's the same exact thing. My illustration is proving a point because it's the same exact thing. It's not by any stretch the same exact thing. Mm-hmm. That's my rant is over.
Yeah. All right.
I'd bring that up.
And real quick, to that point, bringing it back to my thing, if let's say you saw a stack of rocks and you were that's a cool stack of rocks out of nature, right?
Yeah.
Maybe you line up with it just right, and you see like the way that the light dynamics bounce off of it, and you like in your mind you start thinking of like, okay, what are like what have been the paths of all these rocks as they've moved through time and space to get in this crazy arrangement, and then you're like, your mind starts worrying, and you have like a moment, right?
Here we go.
But
the rocks you've seen, Brant,
sure,
in your dreams.
But if somebody took these rocks and they put them in an exhibit, right, you might not have that kind of internal revelation.
It means something different. The context is different.
Yeah, and I think it would be hard for me to accept that one would be art and the other wouldn't. When they could have like the same impact on you.
Well, and because I guess are you also saying the meaning of looking at it would change too? Like you're going to an exhibit, seeing the rocks, could bring a thought to you that the meaning of that could be different than the same exact set of rocks that you just stumble upon, not in an exhibit.
And not always, like sometimes it could have, you know, a bigger, more important meaning to you, and sometimes it could have a lesser meaning to you. Like in some cases, maybe I see those rocks in an exhibit and I go like, wow, this could have really said something, but now all I can think about is a dude walking around picking up all these rocks, thinking that he's stacking them in a cool way.
Do you guys think certain like movies wouldn't qualify as art? Like if I remember people bringing this up in a similar discussion that we had in college in one of our classes. Mm-hmm. And when it was first brought up to me, I was like, yeah, sure. Shouldn't all movies like be, you know, there's some art stuff flowing. But then like they brought up the... not even the first Mr. Bean movie, but the third Mr. Bean movie that's like super just like it, like it's almost like the script just like existed always because it was like, you know, it's not very much.
There was a laundry list of movies I was thinking John could have said, and Mr. Bean 3 is not on that list.
But it's like, but you know that like there's certain movies that just feel like
pumped out.
It feels like the intention from everyone involved is to have a consumable movie, whereas you go to something else, and maybe this is going back to what Brant was saying, what some have, they would all be a certain level of art, but the, you know, like the new Tarantino movie would be a different caliber of art. But if the qualifier is, as long as one person is declaring this is art, it's like, I want to find the one person declaring to me that Mr. Bean 3 is the, you know, art. Or, I actually haven't even seen it, but that was the example that was brought up.
Okay.
But I'm sure you get what I'm saying at least. Yeah. Paul Blart.
The Ridiculous Six. All of those Adam Sandler ones.
Say again?
All of the Adam Sandler movies.
Right.
Like he said, yeah, that I do them because they get to go to Hawaii.
Uh-huh. And there might also be something to be said about like, there's art, and then there's like high art, which really takes into account all that intentionality.
But I think the audience too is when you go to, like, there's movies that I really enjoy that I'm struggling to think of one, but like, let's say it was the Mr. Bean movie where you like go into it knowing, oh, I'll enjoy this, but I'm not necessarily looking for an artful experience. And in some case, it might surprise you. Mm-hmm. But in other cases, you're just like, I really just want to relax and eat popcorn and have a laugh versus going, like, there's other movies you go to where you're looking to be affected by it. You're going into, so I don't know if there's a difference there.
I think making that atmosphere, making someone having a movie that is comfortable to someone, does not necessarily ding it versus something that maybe would make you think a little more or pose higher conceptual problems.
Yeah. I'm mostly saying I think there's some projects that everyone, the audience, the filmmakers, the whoever's financing the film, they all kind of go into it knowing what's up. They're like, we're gonna make this thing. And it's going to be this thing, right?
We got to get paid.
They're not like everyone knows and everyone's fine with it. Like no one's mad. No one's going Mr. Bean 3
now
and being
I'm mad.
Like and being
right,
like,
no one's going
Rowan, they threw away this opportunity for, you know, whatever kind of art. But there's other movies where you go into it and the movie, might be better than
than you expected.
Something like, mm-hmm. I'm saying the movie might be better than something like a Mr. Bean 3 or what. I keep hitting the pick on that movie because I haven't even seen
haven't
it. Maybe
seen
it's
it.
The most artful movie ever done. But just for sake of example, but then you go in with the expectation though of seeing some type of high art, but then it comes across. Mm-hmm. So I think expectation does have a lot to do with kind of your response to it.
And I think something like film is interesting because I feel like there's so much art in the crafting of them.
Yeah.
Like any kind of craftsman-y vocation, like carpentry obviously has a lot of art. It's basically sculpture.
Yeah.
Architecture has a tremendous amount of art. All of those things have art that kind of come together to make art pieces that aren't conventional art.
Mm. Like you can't go in and flip the camera on and expect it to be fine.
Mm.
Like there's an art of going
right.
to, like no matter what movie someone's a cinematographer for, mm-hmm. they have to have a certain amount of familiarity with film as an art to
sure.
even make something that's watchable.
But I don't think watchability. I think the choice to be random or the choice to be unintentional is also a choice.
Well, yes. Well, I guess if you went to see a Mr. Bean movie where the camera work was actually really awful, people would just mistake be like, "Oh, well, this is art. Like, look at the
Paul
camera."
I might upside it. I might give it a shot.
Mr. Bean's great, by the way. I'm disappointed I couldn't come up with a better example off the top of my head.
Yeah.
So I ran with the one that was the example given to me years ago, but. Were you guys ever Mr. Bean fans?
No.
No.
Oh,
I can't
used
get
to be
into
on Netflix,
British humor.
Not.
I can't do it.
I think I grew up with it, so it probably helps.
Yeah.
Mm. But it's good stuff.
Very cool.
Art. Catch it.
Art fever. Catch it.
Oh, here we go. Here's the Merriam-Webster dictionary from Jotman here. Sorry for pronouncing your screen name wrong. Art, something that is created with imagination and skill. That is beautiful or that expresses important ideas or feelings.
Hmm.
And my only point
so
of contention is that you can create with imagination and skill a moment in your head as you see it.
Okay.
With something that you didn't necessarily make.
Mm. So something
well, and you could also
in reality, would you would add like a clarifier there? Like something that's in...
Maybe. I don't know. That's something to think about.
A real space.
You could probably have a real artful LSD trip or something. I don't know.
Well,
it's just
think,
like I'm seeing the craziest thing.
But what happens when they develop technology where I can beam over my thoughts to you and I can present it? I can be like, exactly think the way that would be cool art, right?
That would be.
So like you have a one-to-one experience,
mm-hmm.
and it's me expressing my thoughts to you in a way. That's cool. I want to be a part of that.
And I think even the Merriam-Webster dictionary definition here is, for me, probably still a little too defined. Like, there's plenty of art that is made sans imagination, sans skill, that is intentionally ugly, or that chooses to focus on ideas that are not important or... you know, groundbreaking, you know, that are kind of standard, you know.
Who says it's ugly, though, Bryce? Who decides that the art is ugly?
Okay.
What is ugly?
God damn it. Don't do that to
Bam.
Me.
Boom.
Damn, roasted. Yeah. So there we go.
Oh, there we go. Yeah, beauty is in the eye of the beholder.
Well, that's what Brandt says.
Kind
are
of.
You joking?
I mean, that's kind
no,
of
not joking.
No. In the mind.
I mean,
oh,
is the in the mind of
beholder would be my argument.
Okay,
not necessarily the eyes.
Yeah,
but usually, we're a very visual.
Yeah, I mean,
species.
You could be blind and appreciate art. I bet.
Sure, we've got blind Scam School fans.
Yeah, true.
Scam School's art.
Well, music's art, and even if like especially
yeah, music.
Like you could
I
feel
totally
the
yeah, it's not like you make
the,
music or doing.
You can feel the
I forgot about photography.
Of like
I forgot about music. This is going great for me. So, pivoting.
Yeah.
We want to talk about maybe ads.
Sure.
In the past couple of months. I have a funny story about the ad last week. It was the Brian Got a Puppy ad.
Mm-hmm.
And it was on the What episode was that? It was the one before the first Hypnosis episode. So we shot that kind of a little later in the day after podcasts and stuff. And so we probably spent maybe an hour or so between setup and filming, and just kind of even brainstorming and just sussing out what exactly the ad was going to be. We shot a completely different ad, which was not great. It was like not a great ad. And then as we were wrapping up, the moment that you see in the ad where it's just Brian holding Kepler and just like baby talking to him, was just like something he did at the, you know, at the end of it. And then we ended up using that. Like nobody else has the raw footage, but right after he says that, I'm like, that could just be the ad.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it was kind of doubly funny because that was basically the original idea that I had for the ad, would just be Brian with a puppy talking about domain.com. And then that spiraled out into like, the ad would have been like a very on the nose, almost like affront to like those ads that use animals to try to, you know, get people's emotions sort of stirring. So it would have been like, you know, hey, I'm holding this dog. You right. feel emotionally invested. Mm-hmm. I'm taking off my glasses to show you that I'm real.
I'm a family man. Here's my dog.
Yeah. Yeah. Here's some drawings that my kids have drawn right. of Pokemon. And that went on. We must have spent 30 minutes alone just trying to get sneakers on Brian's lap.
Mm-hmm.
And then the idea would be later we would have Kepler and he's like, we replaced that dog with a much cuter dog. And then we just basically threw all of that away. So that's
sometimes simpler is better.
Yeah. It was also funny the idea I had at first. So
I do have to say, I really like how, most of the time we've been doing this show, there's usually been a update on the pup date, right?
Oh, yeah.
And then this month is a literal puppy.
Literal pup date.
It's an actual dog.
Kepler is so amazing. Yeah. He's cute and adorable.
Bites a lot, but
he bites a lot. He likes to jump. He's going to be a jumper.
He's got that cute puppy bite, though, because it's like, I'm kind of biting you, but I'm not really...
Yeah. Yeah, I try to
he bit you in the face or something. He
scratched me on the nose. He scratched me on the nose when we were doing the shoot the other day, right at the start of the day. And then by the end of the day, I look down at my nose and I see this big red mark. I'm like, God damn it, he got me. He got me hard. He got me good. But, you know.
Yeah.
That's what puppies do. I try to, if he bites me, I try to, like, pinch him on his neck. You know, like where a mother dog would like pick up a dog. So I'm not like hurting him, but like just like pull him off me that way to kind of condition him.
The best way to train a dog is to make a whimper and then walk away. Because that's what a dog would do.
Right.
If it was like, hey, you bit me too hard. But
interesting.
Yeah.
Interesting. That almost puts it.
I think I read that on the internet once.
My feeling about that compared to like. Using like a deeper tone of voice or the nipping thing is that puts you on like the same level as the dog compared to if you show a little more gruffness.
Interesting.
Yeah. Without hurting the dog. No one wants to hurt the dog.
Fulton the dog. Put a balloon on that dog. Make it fly up into the sky. That'll teach him. Outside of that, we had a bunch of other ads. We had a lot of voiceover ads, at least with mine.
I had some too, yeah.
Just because ads are hard. I've been running into a real like
we've been hitting
creative wall.
Yeah.
The past few weeks. So like this Hypnosis ad was a like 2 a.m. Oh, I've got an idea on the day that it's due.
And you made Chris Jones a vampire.
I did. I thought conceptually it was really funny.
Because vampires are known for suggestion, so that's kind of a good connection there.
Yeah, well, it goes against everything that he says at the beginning of the episode. He's like, okay, so media misrepresents hypnosis all the time. And so the ad is misrepresenting hypnosis, which I thought was really funny. But it was in a tongue-in-cheek way that I felt was fine. Mm-hmm.
We did a voiceover ad. I think this was for December. It was one of those weeks Justin was in town. Mm-hmm. And they were doing the VR shoots, and
right.
Brian was like wiped. It was on a night attack night, and so they had a long after show, and we forgot to record the voiceover. This was the meditation one, and so Brian was like, "I'll do it. I just need a minute." But then Justin stepped in and was like, "Bro, I got this." So Justin Robert Young does a domain ad in December. Nice. Did a domain ad, which was nice. He was good. He really got into it. He's because he's done like a lot of audiobooks and stuff. So
right,
like kind of having that like real gentle, very very subtle slant on the mm-hmm. on the voice. You know, he got into it pretty quick. So
yeah, man, it's tough.
It's getting tough.
Yeah. I've been running at it for a long time, and I ran through a lot of ideas.
Yeah, man. We did one today before this,
mm-hmm.
which will be, I guess, on the one that goes up on Wednesday. Mm. But we actually shot it multicam in studio here because I was in it, and I'm hoping it turns out well because I'm in it. I'm always like real self conscious when I'm on camera.
See, it's funny because like you're not. Always in yours, but Brian's in yours a lot.
Yes.
And mine is almost exclusively always. Me.
Right. And that's a function of me like not being a real big fan of my face or my voice.
Yeah.
I must say, Brian, I'm actually always really impressed by your acting abilities. Especially you,
you commit.
You're someone who, like, thanks. You know, you do the whatchamacallit, the Myers-Briggs things, and you end up on the more introverted side of stuff, right?
Like far
and
so corner.
It's I'm always pleasantly surprised by the your ability to just like play, you know, the character you're aiming for well, and I don't know, you always make me laugh during those. So
well, thank you.
Like I the Williams one, like
Williams is pretty good.
I wonder, like I think you're pretty outgoing with us, but also we kind of know each other, so it's easier to be a little more talkative. With
it's
each
taken
other.
Some time to get comfortable with you guys.
Yeah.
So.
But it's. It's really admirable that you kind of have that same relationship with the camera and just with being on camera.
Right.
Do you have to kind of like separate yourself from that then and like be like, I am something else?
Sometimes.
What's your method?
What's your method?
My method.
You take a year to like get in character.
Yeah.
You like only act like... I'm trying to think.
Iron Man.
You only act like Iron Man for a year and then you do the ad.
Yeah. You know, there's a lot of like, I kind of do the same thing with shooting ads that I do with like everything, like leaving the house. Leaving the house is a really stressful and anxious thing for me to do. Mm-hmm. So a lot of times, you guys will notice, I'm usually not early for stuff. And that's because I spend like 20 minutes like prepping myself to like get out the door. And so shooting ads is kind of the same thing where like there's a long buildup of me like getting into like the space of doing an ad. And you'll notice most of the time my ads don't have other people in it because it's easier for me to act without other people. Although it's insane to shoot by myself.
Yeah. It's tough
as the camera operator and actor.
I just want to see the feature length Brant Hughes movie that he has directed, edited, you know,
and
starred in, but it's only him. Like, right. Maybe you could even have, like, some, I didn't want to spoil the movie I was thinking of, but something at the end where it's like, oh, there's two brands, or, like, you know, like, right, there's right, some, right. like, crazy stuff going on, but.
I've definitely done a couple, like, little short film stuff. Feature length would be tough, but probably doable.
Oh, as a one-man crew feature-length film?
Yeah.
Oh.
It'd be tough, but.
It'd be tough.
Of all the people.
You would be pretty well suited for it.
Right.
Yeah, you'd be pretty well suited for it.
Yeah, the biggest problem with those is everything has to be tripod, just locked down. Sometimes if you have like the GH4, you can do like, you know, the digital zoom because you have so much area to work with. But yeah, it can be tough.
Or you could do it when the robots are good enough to like do the camera work to
mimic humans.
Would you credit the robots for that?
Yeah, would that be art? Hmm. Well, you would be directing them. So
you'd be directing the robots.
Yeah.
Depends on
whether we're programming them or whatever.
If we've reached a point of sentience, you have to.
Yeah, I see.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Once we cross that threshold.
That's why they list all those dogs in the Telltale games.
What if you programmed the robot? Like, you were 100% responsible for its entire...
But does he program it with the ability to think creatively? Or to think with free will?
If I program the robot and it's sentient...
Is there free will?
I would argue no, but that's a different philosophical question entirely. If I program the robot to have sentience, you credit the robot, but you also credit yourself as the creator of the robots, right? So you do both. So you're like a
robot director.
Doesn't that just seem like more like? Oh, he did every. It's like, oh, Brant Hughes. These robot names you have, like, you know, like T97B or whatever, you know, like going up. But then, like, after, and they're like, oh, look, other people helped or other things helped. But then it comes up, creator of all these things, Brant Hughes. They're like, him again.
I'm just going to name them like Brant Hughes' Robot Actor 1 as played by Brant Hughes' Robot Actor.
If you have
robot actors now, too.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
That is true. Because if you're in charge of naming the robots, you could just name all the robots Brant Hughes. Because let's say there was a family of creative people, right? And the dad was like, well, I want credit for all this, and just named everyone in his family that, like, you know, his didn't name. Work with his wife, but named all of his kids. Yeah, you know, let's say Brad Pitt did it. And it was a Brad Pitt direction, but Brad Pitt is every single role, but it's really just his it's just his different kids.
That'd be pretty good. Oh, man. Imagine
Bradley Pitt, Bradford Pitt, Bradworth Pitt, Bradwell Pitt.
Like, we're getting super abstract.
Imagine the SEO on that. Oh, what a mess. Unless it's the robot thing, then it's great because it all filters to me.
What? Yeah. Man.
Do you credit people that manufacture provided the food you ate every time you do something successful?
Well, so that's the thing, is like people don't credit drones when they remote control them in like movies or elsewhere.
That's true.
Right. Although sometimes
the line is pretty clear, right? Like it's
the pilot.
Yeah, the line is clear, but
a lot of times they will do, like, if they got a good deal and they have a good relationship with the drone manufacturer, they will specially credit them at the end with like
special thanks or promotional consideration.
Yeah, we're also thanking Panavision.
Sure.
And we're also thanking Sony, and we're also thanking like all these people who provided our equipment that we couldn't have done this without.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So they kind of do get their own special place sometimes.
Sometimes. Yeah. Interesting.
This is related to another rant.
All right.
It's way more of a stretch,
and it's Star Wars related, so it's really dangerous territory.
I'm taking bets on how related to Mr. Bean 3 it is.
It kept sticking out in The Force Awakens, but I need to watch the other credit rolls all the way through again.
To Force Awakens
but
mention.
Did you guys notice how all the credits are in the traditional... No, it's not a spoiler. Okay. All the credits are in traditional blue... going through, right? Uh-huh. Like all the movies. Uh-huh. Okay. And at the end, Kodak provided the film.
Yes.
And so they had the Kodak logo. And I believe, I need to actually check this. Maybe it stuck out to me in the theater more than the other ones. But the Kodak logo is like full color. And it just stands out. It's so weird. And I feel like I remember some film logo, maybe they even used Kodak for the other ones or the other film ones, just being in the blue thing. And I was like,
I mean,
it always bothers me.
If it is, I'm sure it's like a branding thing, especially because they have the Kodak yellow.
It has to be the yellow.
Yeah, like it's got to be on with a brand identity.
Yeah,
otherwise,
some companies are super strict about the way that their logo can be represented.
See, if it was me, I would be like, well, the credits have to be blue because it's the Star Wars credits. You can't have color.
Have to stay in canon.
It has to be blue.
But not with canon.
And I would just use a different film provider. I'd be like, well, sorry, then. We can't screw up. I mean, it's film. It's going to look fine with, you know, whatever other
I would
other
love
company.
To hear that call with JJ. Like, listen, Kodak, we can't do the yellow. So we're going
to
go with
and what's Kodak going to say? Oh, well, you have to do the yellow on the biggest movie that's coming out in the next 10 years. Like, what are... They would say, oh,
you
I understand.
Have a lot of leverage.
I understand. Yeah, I feel like they didn't try it. I feel like they didn't even try. They didn't even ask. They were like, oh, it has to be yellow. Okay.
Come on, JJ. Why didn't you try?
Anyway.
All we ask is for a little effort.
Please?
All right. God. It's Star Wars.
I do have to go back and actually see if maybe it is
How
in color
or
the other
one's Star Wars?
The new one?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Three times. Sure. I've seen it three
That's
times.
Low for what I consider, especially now that we missed a month.
Yeah, well, I've enacted a lot of self-control.
I can admire that. I saw it twice.
Yeah.
I've only seen it once. I don't even know that I'm still on seeing it.
Got better
second time.
Each time? Did I you
wanted,
feel the same?
I wanted to see it again. I just never got around to it. Yeah. I mean, as with most films that I see multiple times, like, some parts hold up better and some parts don't.
Yeah, sure.
So it was fairly balanced in that capacity. But
yeah, at this point, I'm hoping they announce a Blu-ray thing soon so I don't have to keep going and see it.
But nah, man. They're going to keep it in theaters for another 4 months.
I know.
They're
going
to re-release it in theaters.
It's
going to
be
again.
In theater. It's going to be like Frozen where it's still in theaters when it comes out on DVD.
Yeah. Probably. It probably
It was
be.
Like super close or something because it was running for so long.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. There's that happens every now and then with stuff.
Yeah. So we are. Oh, good God, we're at like 90 minutes. Do we want to hit this question from Curtis LaRock and then maybe give it the old boot?
Sure. Yeah. Sorry for my tangents.
Jesus.
No problem.
I derailed.
I don't know why
like
you got the patent
times.
On those John rants.
I know.
We got a question from Curtis via Twitter. Do you want to read it, Brent?
Sure. SX. So presumably South by Southwest. I don't know anything about it. It's on the usual weekend.
Yes. The guys talked about it on Night Attack because there was confusion about this. It's not in set in stone, but it looks like it will be the weekend of March the 12th, ideally with the event happening on the 12th.
Okay.
And it's not going to be an all music show like last year because with Nerdtacular on hiatus, the guys wanted to do another live show and they want to get into doing live Night Attacks. So they're going to do something where the Posse is involved, but they'll probably just like bookend an episode of Night Attack.
Gotcha.
But dates, that's the date we're shooting for. Time, location, TBD.
Okay.
Yep.
And he also asks, puppy? So presumably a pup date as in studio space.
So Brian was talking very openly on Night Attack about a property that he was interested in.
Yeah, I wasn't sure how much he had spoken about that.
But he had talked about it pretty openly. But the end result was that it just wasn't for us. It was kind of a fixer-upper, and it would have been a fixer-upper to get us to the capacity that we are now. Like, the workshop, it had a workshop, but it didn't have AC. Right. The house was, or the garage.
I had not heard this part. This is a sad part of the update.
I'm sorry.
Yeah,
I
heard about this
it
part.
It sounded like it was good.
It's an all right property, but, you know, it's... if the idea was still to also build a studio, Brian really wants to build this studio tower, along with the workshop, which would have also needed upgrades. The garage would need upgrades. It wasn't right. So that's a pup date. Unfortunately.
Yeah. And then, real quick, let's just, run down some stuff that's coming up soon.
Okay. So the thing that we shot, I guess we can we at least talk about who it was with?
I don't know. I mean,
we're pretty sure it's coming out, or I don't know.
It's definitely coming out soon, but I never know what the actual company policy is with the stuff, especially when it's like, it's supposed to be secret, but then Brian will usually talk about it on Night Attack.
Well, then we'll keep it vague. So we shot a digital lesson. We actually shot a bookend for a digital lesson.
Yeah, it's
an
not,
extra credit style thing.
Yeah, it's not extra credit. It's more. How should I say it?
It's kind of a course. It's a little less one
note. I'll say this.
Than...
If extra credit was like the after school extra credit to like, you know, make the teacher like you more.
This would be the scam school.
I'm saying that, like, extra credits, like, you do extra credit to get extra credit. It's like, you know, it's not part of the required course or whatever. You know, you graduate without the extra credit. You don't need the extra credit. But it's nice to have. And you learn something extra, and everyone around you, they're like, yeah, that guy does the extra credit, right?
Yeah.
So that's extra credit. This is more of a, like, so you graduated from scam school or whatever. And then you don't need to keep going at all. You're done. Keep watching Scam School, obviously.
Please.
Keep buying our products, obviously.
Domain.com.
But it's like, this analogy is bad. But
it's its own sort of self-contained course.
I want to continue my education. Mm-hmm. I'm going to sign up.
It's night school.
For some night school in a very particular, you know, type of
class.
Art class, learning.
You have a particular set of skills.
Yeah, I want a particular set of skills. So it's a scam school masterclass assassinations. That's what we're teaching.
Yeah.
Right?
Directed by
Liam Neeson.
We're not teaching people.
So that's coming up.
Yeah, we have Liam Neeson to teach us how to assassinate people.
So we'll cut it off because it's coming up in a couple weeks.
Special guest Liam Neeson also joined us for a couple of episodes of Scam School.
We've talked about the shoots. We've got some Modern Rogues in the pipeline.
Coming up real soon.
This Wednesday, it'll probably be out by the time you hear this. The Hypnosis Part 2 will be out on YouTube.
Yeah, that will be public.
It's good. It answers. I was looking through some of the comments, and it answers some of the comments, or it addresses some of the things that the comments mentioned. So that's kind of a good sign that it'll be satisfying. Cool.
So this next thing, Design Philosophy of Scam School.
An episode. To talk about it.
Just kind of a standalone video. I want to put out a thing on the second channel at some point. I'm really determined to get it done at some point. I just haven't had time, and I want to sit down and talk about, like, the ways that Scam School has changed over the years, and kind of some of the reasoning behind that, and how some of that was sourced, and all that kind of stuff. So that should be, like, a good in-depth behind the scenes look at how Scam School has changed since I started working on it.
That would be a cool thing, even if. Scene kind of, if you play, like, side by side two episodes two, and really you can really see, even if you watch one and then watch an old one and then a more recent one,
right,
you see this huge, you know, kind of evolution of the show. And so it would be cool to see really see that, you know, being dissected.
And it supports the theory that Scam School is art, because there was a lot of intentionality behind
there you go.
So and then what's this last one?
This one I thought would be a fun idea for the second channel. I kind of mentioned it a little bit here and there, but I think it would be fun for us to find an hour one of these days to sit down and just, like, watch through a bunch of ads, because we can kind of talk about, like, how some of those came to be and some of the behind-the-scenes stuff some of these ads.
It's like a commentary.
Yeah, and also just to kind of reflect on all of these things, because there's – like, I was trying to inspire myself for the Hypnosis ad, and I just had nowhere to go, so I just watched through, like, all of them.
A bunch of old ads,
And in my mind, I remember, like, oh, well, there's a lot of good ones in the back end, but lately I've been kind of just, like, phoning it in. But, like, as I watched through them, I was like, actually, there's, like, really good stuff peppered throughout, like, the entire run. And so it might be interesting to kind of sit down and look through that, especially since a lot of that stuff, you know, happened before we had Second Channel and before we had an outlet for some kind of behind the scenes stuff. So that just might be a fun thing to do, and get Brian in here.
I wonder how the format will be, but that would be fun to do.
What are we posting on the Scam Stuff channel these days? Is that regular stuff, or is that kind of
Scam Stuff channel there. Lately has been mostly, like, extended outtakes and stuff.
Gotcha.
Have been cut from the episode.
Which I make a point to get to pull outtakes, and then I want them to be enough to be a video, you know.
Yeah.
I need to go back and look at some of those and get those up.
Yeah, there are some times where there are episodes where it's just, like, there's just not enough.
Yeah, this Hypnosis one did not have barely any.
And there are
some of them have.
There are also some cases, like this week, where, like, I could probably make an extended outtakes episode from Hypnosis Part 1. Not a very long one, but I could probably make one. It's just, like, I'm so swamped with the Modern Rogue thing and Skin School Remix and all of these things that I just haven't necessarily had time for it. There's a couple old episodes I want to go back through and make extended outtakes, cuts of those.
Yeah.
But outside of that, we kind of just every now and then we do have a one-off video like our super cooling beer thing.
Yeah.
Which is sort of Modern Rogue-esque, but a little bit more concise and condensed down.
Yeah. And that's another thing where we're kind of sussing out what is and isn't regular there.
Yeah. Is that some of the style? Were you playing with some of the style you're interested in working?
A little bit. I mean,
because I thought some of the, I thought the look of those is, I think I'm thinking of the, I think I'm thinking of the super cooling one. There was one that had the graphical style of a lot of the, I don't know how to even describe it, but I really thought the look of it was distinct compared to Scam School, and I thought that was very cool.
Right.
It made me excited for how future stuff will look.
Yeah, I mean, we're playing around with a lot of that stuff, trying to feel out what kind of content is appropriate to put on there, what style to do things in, all of that stuff. It's still very much a work in progress, but it's been fun to come up with some new things.
Yeah, all this I thought was, no pun intended, super cool.
Oh my god.
Got him. Got him.
All right. With that pun, I think we should probably call it.
Sure. Yeah. It's been a long one.
It's been about 101 minutes.
Yeah. You got to get Cord Killers going.
I've got to get ready for Cord Killers, but I have just enough time. John, social media hiatus is over.
Yeah. It's funny because
doesn't mean he's got to post a lot.
Like we have discussed. Or like I was saying earlier with, like, when you kind of transition from, you know, like, oh, the job was this way in December, now it's this way in January. It's like the kind of the same thing where, you know, you go off of Twitter for a long time. It's just like, I don't have the app installed on my phone still. I have to do that. It's kind of a weird getting back into it. I have posted a few things. I'm doing more reading than posting. But yeah, I'm at John Tilton, JONTIL2 and JIL2, and yes, that's how I spell my own name. If you want to follow me on Twitter, I think I've only posted Star Wars things and not even in-depth thoughts, like very like
going to see Star Wars random for the third time.
Random things.
Yeah. Tilt on then. Yeah. That's John's solo podcast. It's called Tilt On.
Tilt On.
Tilt On.
Oh, Tilt On.
Brant.
At Galrag, GATOWAG. You can find me there on Twitter or wherever else, but I mostly do Twitter. If you have me on Facebook, I'm not going to accept your friend request. Sorry.
One sentence. Can you sell people on Pizza Snake?
Pizza Snake. Okay.
Pizza Snake.
Pizza Snake is the twin identical brother of Spitta Snake. And he was genetically trained to be to embody his personality.
Yeah.
And they both travel the world of
the 1980s.
Yeah, Metal Gear Topia, and they have pizza parties all the time.
Yeah.
And they hang out with D-Dog, and they're just one big happy family.
That's great.
Mm-hmm. Coming to Fox this fall.
Fantastic. You can find me on Twitter at Brycas, BRYCAS, or on Twitch, Brycas as well, BRYCAS. This show, you can subscribe to it, get the RSS and stuff if you go to neshcom.com/TBB, neshcom.com/TBB. You can get the RSS, you can get the iTunes link, you can find the new episodes, the old episodes. Sate your bizarre briefing lust for another month.
Yeah. Yeah, boy.
Yeah. Skirt.
Bye.
Bye, guys.
Thanks for watching, everyone.
No thanks.
Wait. Yeah, sorry. The, like, tone I'd had on that, like, ended it on a really awkward note. like someone's like, well, now.
What?
It feels like there's 5 minutes left now.
Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.